Good afternoon. It's 12:06 and time for ArtsCentric Midday Matters here on WBOY. We'd love for you to be a part of today's conversation, so make sure you do give us a call with any questions or comments at 260-452-1185. You can always email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm or post on our Facebook page. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Julia Meek.
Thank you, Sarah. And, you know, it's not quite the last Friday of the month, but it certainly is the most art-centric Saturday on the horizon. Mm-hmm. And here in the studio, the tastiest of art-centric celebrations starts right now, I declare. DID's Tana Winker is here to share tomorrow's downtown excitement, all orbiting around its Arts United Taste of the Arts Festival, and we have Jim Sparrow on board to help talk about that. And then grab a seat in the green room. It's drama, drama, drama in our second segment with First Press Theater's Tom Hoffrichter filling us in on the coming month's theatrical offerings and openings, and he has invited Renee Butler to join in on that conversation. But first, as we love to do, Sarah and I each have a quick pick art tip for you, a sparkling gem among the treasure trove of art centricity happening this weekend you won't want to miss. What's your pick, Sarah?
My pick is actually happening in Roanoke. It's at Crestwood's Frame Shop and Gallery, and there's an art gallery going on this Sunday. There's also going to be some local food from Brava's Dogs, and there's going to be Heaven's Gateway Drug, a local Fort Wayne band, playing there as well. Some of the artists that are going to be featuring their work are David Berkeley, Michael Dickham, Andrew Duback, Marie, Luke Hardy, and Joseph Zimmerman. And that's just a couple of the many artists that are going to be there. They have a Facebook page that we'll link to as well. So if you'd like to look out and find more information about that, it starts at 8 p.m. And again, that's in Roanoke at Crestwood's Frame Shopping Gallery. And that's 314 North Main Street.
A good call, and it's also like a little satellite of art centricity mm-hmm. going on, which is kind of nice yeah. and wonderful. It sounds tasty, too.
Yeah, and a fun thing to do on a Sunday.
There.
Yeah.
And, you know, my quick pick is with all the weekend's most art-centric flurry of activities, I'm just going to be getting a jump start on meeting the music, and that's tonight at Parkview Field because it's a Bob Dylan concert. Bob and his band are starting at 8, and if it's anything like his last Fort Wayne concert, the bands and the crowd will be jumping before that. I hear there are still tickets available. I hope to see many of you folks there tonight, so come on over and say hi if you see me before I see you. And mm-hmm. in the meantime, this special nearly last Friday buzz continues with the Downtown Improvement District's lovely marketing and events director, Tana Winker. And this month, she's doing double duty, coordinating Arts United Taste of the Arts Festival. Therefore, she has brought its ever, ever mighty director, Jim Sparrow, and we're going to be talking all about that. What's cooking in the art-centric kitchen, Tana?
Oh, my gosh. And, Julia, I can't believe you didn't pick dessert as your pick weekend.
Well, it is Bob Dylan. You
know, well, I know. And that's going to be a great show. And crazy enough, I'm going to try to make it, even though we are setting up for the taste right now.
Well, you'll be right down there.
Yeah. But dessert is going to be so awesome. I know we're going to talk about that in a bit. But, you know, we're doing Meet the
and
Music
yes.
tomorrow night at the Taste.
We can't wait. Sarah and I, of course, are going to have the best seat in the house for yes. that. And everybody else has got a good one, too. Mm-hmm. And, yes, we'll talk about that a little later. But truly, Tana, I think you've outdone yourself this year.
Well, the Taste is going to be fabulous, and we will get to that. But there are other last Saturday things
yes.
that start even before the Taste tomorrow, such as the Bar Street Market, who is going to extend its hours for the Taste. So they're going to run from 9 a.m. till 4 p.m.
Cool.
So if you want to come early and, you know, do some shopping and then come over to the festival, it's all in the same location. And if you don't want to drive, tomorrow is free fare day across the whole city for CityLink in honor of last Saturday's and our wonderful Taste of the Arts Festival. So you can take a CityLink bus to downtown, and then in the afternoon there are shuttles to take you around to other things, so you don't really need a car.
I think that's fantastic, and that runs through the whole evening. So if
yeah.
folks are doing the dessert, actually the whole city is going to be a wonderful smorgasbord of music at that point. You can still be using the free bus service to get from here to there to here to there.
Right, and the CityLink Free Fare Day applies everywhere across the city
that's
tomorrow.
So anybody taking the bus.
Anybody will have free fare, but we want people to come downtown and take that bus and learn a new route, and they have a nice route planner on the website. So if you go to the CityLink site, Don't have it in front of me, but that's a great way to plan your route and anticipate what the times are for the schedule you need. But that's a great way to start the day, and it goes the whole day. So
that is fantastic. And once, okay, let's just assume that many savvy listeners are going to jump on that bus, come downtown, and what can they do before they even get to the festival gate?
Well, we have Tech Ventures having some workshops in the morning, and you can learn more about them. They're going to be building junk bots and testing robots over at their Tech Venture station. It's across from the library downtown. Stoners is going to be doing magic tricks again in his
shop. I would be
disappointed
if I heard otherwise, and that's great because they're all things magic and special event and costuming and just a wonderful world right down on Harrison Street. And Mr. Stoner loves to share a good trick, so he's going to be right there.
He's going to take a break in his shop midday to come and perform at Magic at Taste of the Arts. But before then, he will be in his shop from 9 a.m. on, 9:30 on.
Isn't he magic enough to be two places at once? Not yet, but he'll be working on that for next year. Okay.
Historic Fort Wayne is having a living history with the Fort Miami's traders coming in, and they're going to have events all day long. It starts at 10 a.m. and goes both Saturday and Sunday. So
great.
You stay at the Taste and come back Sunday, you can still go to the Old Fort and catch some of that historic reenactment stuff. So, again, that starts before the festival, and the Conservatory will be having discounted admission. They open at 10 a.m.
Great.
Science Central will have half-price admission, and they also open in the morning. So you can really make a whole day of it and start early if you wanted.
Start early and stay late.
Absolutely. And then, of course, we have the Taste Festival. And as part of that, the History Center is open for free. The Museum of Art is open for free. Cinema Center is holding free movies. Mm-hmm. All these things are happening all afternoon out just at the perimeter of the campus where the festival will be taking on. It's all of its excitement.
It is. I can't stand it. And, Jim, speaking of all this excitement, it just as we spoke before the show, you must really love your job.
I love my job. And we're doing great things, and I get to work with great people. It's just a lot of fun.
So tell us your take on the Taste.
Taste has turned into everything that we hoped it would and more. When we decided to start the Taste of the Arts 4 years ago, we were sort of doing a small bio dare to those who remember the Fine Arts Festival many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. Also knowing that it was going to be a time to help encourage people to get back into viewing the arts, whether it's performing or gallery openings as the season started. But then being able to marry downtown restaurants and local restaurants within the region with all the things we're trying to do and encourage people to come downtown, be part of the community. So the Taste is going to be the biggest and best this year that we've had so far, and it really has begun to take on a life of its own, which is exactly what we wanted it to do.
Indeed, and I like your reference to the original Fine Arts Festival and the spirit of that. Mm-hmm. Certainly would be proud of everything that this has morphed into and expanded into, and certainly there's no medium left behind, I think, in this event.
It's one of the things that makes the Taste unique among festivals, and as far as I can tell, in the entire Midwest. I've been searching for a festival that has theater and dance and bands of all genres, from historic classic music and settlers music, all the way to hip-hop and electronica. It's everything in between. In addition, visual arts, poetry readings, all of these things in one day. There's no festival like it around, and that's one of the things that makes it so awesome. Mm-hmm.
If people are wondering, should they pack a lunch, pack a beverage? Well, you could, but in the meantime, there's just, a whole avenue of wonderful food and beverage and tastes, more tastes of the arts, right?
Oh, absolutely. If you believe culinary talent is an art, and many of us love to eat, do.
I believe eating is an art. Okay.
Well, then there's plenty of that tomorrow, because it's 30 restaurants at this point. We had one back out and one join yesterday, so it worked out perfect. We're back on 30. And they do range from hot dogs all the way up to, gourmet filet sliders. It's just crazy variety.
But there's something for everyone.
Absolutely. And everything is priced in dollar increments. You purchase tickets so that it's a fundraiser for Arts United. And those tickets are split between the vendors and Arts United at the end of the day, the sale. So it is a fundraiser. But everything is priced in small increments, $2 to $4 tops. And the $4 is going to be more your gourmet stuff. And it's small portions, so you can sample a lot of different things.
That's fantastic. And also, not the least of the arts that we're going to be tasting all day long and into the evening, I'm probably being on the dessert end of things, is the music. And what's happening during the day with music?
Oh my gosh, do you want to go there?
I know we only have the rest of this half hour left. So yeah, and it would be easier to say what's not happening there. But yeah, tell us just a little bit about that. How many stages will there be?
There are 9 stages. And on those 9 stages, there are 68 acts scheduled. And that includes dessert. So up until 6 p.m., I think that knocks it to 60, right? So it's still a whole lot in the first 12 to 7 period. And it is very across the board.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be hard to pinpoint any one thing because it's
going
to be
fantastic.
So crazy.
And the variety. And also I know, and I am very, very, very proud for the first time, WBOI is the proud sponsor of the dessert stage, and that's a Meet the Music dessert stage. And so, and this will not be broadcast live, but we will be making a wonderful show to share in early October that will feature all of our artists. And who are our artists, are you going to ask? Well, and where is it, you might ask? Well, it's we have a fantastic stage, Barrett McNagney parking lot. Mm-hmm. That's the old Electron building, and due east of that, that's on Berry Street. So at the corner of Berry and Bar, we have their gracious use of their parking lot. So we have a wonderful monster, large, friendly atmosphere and stage for everybody. We start at 6 and go to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be Sunny Taylor will be opening for us, and then she and Augustus Berry will do a duo song, which is always delightful to hear them. And then Augustus will trade the beautiful Sonny for the not quite as beautiful, but we love him, Chad Elvington, and he's beautiful in his own way. And they'll be playing in duo until 7 o'clock, and then we have Distractions, Molly and John Brogan and Craig Gitt coming up for wonderful, fantastically wonderful folk and Americana music. And then at 8 o'clock, we have Elkie Summers, which is rockin' good, wonderful and beautiful female band, which people just love, and we're happy to have them on board. And then certainly we would serve something flaming for the end of dessert, and that would be Left Lane Cruiser, and they just do ripping good blues, you know, red hot blues, and they're going to be there from 9 to 10. So that is just one section of town that has fantastic tastes of music going on, and I know that we're not the only evening music stage.
No, actually there are 2 other stages that we're aware of, and possibly a third, if Come to Go is still doing their event, so that would make another stage. In addition to dessert, there's Rock the Plaza, and tomorrow night's acts are Todd Harold Band, Black Cat Mambo, and the Freak Brothers. That concert is also attached to us with a CityLink free shuttle, like we do every last Saturday. It's going to connect right at dessert from Bar and Berry Corner and go down Berry and take you to Rock the Plaza. It's also going to go past the intersection where you can get off and go to the Dash Inn, where the electronic guys who are running the stage during the day for the taste are going to go to the Dash and do an evening show of electronic music. And that's a free admission event, but it is 21 and over, starts at 9. So there will be an overlap there between the concerts. Come to Go is not on the CityLink route because it's a little far over, but they will also be having music. So it's a phenomenal night to stay downtown.
And to know that you can really bus hop from place to place to place to place. And also, we have to mention again and again, because short of buying what you might want in the food and beverage lane, and I know that Sarah and I will be there in between the breaks and in our bands, to be sure, that is right next to the dessert stage. I can say it that way. It's that'll be along the east lane of Bar, in between Berry and Main Street. So everything's happening everywhere, and you can take a bus right to it. Now, what could be better than that?
And the word free comes into play on all these things. Free Rock the Plaza, free dessert, free Taste of the Arts, free CityLink shuttles. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a great time to come down. And the campus is bustling with energy for the Taste of the Arts, but it's bustling all the time now. The DeSouvreau is freshly painted thanks to the Museum of Art in the city. So come down and see that lovely piece of sculpture, which we're lucky to have, as well as we just announced today the opening of the Arts Tix, Sweetwater Arts Tix box office, which is a community ticketing site, which, again, links people for ease and access of being able to use the arts in this community, as well as coming into the Hour Center. I know that ArtLink is actually combining because of the activity with an opening. So it'll be hopping, and it'll be full of fun, energy. You'll see lots of people you know, and there'll be great food.
Who could ask for anything more? Well, we could. Actually, I would just like to say thank you to Arts United for everything that it does 24/7, 365, because it really does. Speaking of connections and speaking of links, it really makes it for the whole public. And with your great center downtown and the great Hour Center, it's just it's a lovely time for everybody to come and see their old favorite things in Fort Wayne, the things that are happening right on Fryman Square with the whole Taste of the Arts, and just have a really good time. It's downtown being used like it should be, I guess.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great weekend, and it's great to see, as you mentioned, downtown being used all the time now. And the arts are a very much a central part of that.
And can we say enough times? Everything is free.
Yeah. Well, I know that especially in these economic times, free is good, but it is a community event. As you mentioned earlier, not only is this a unique festival, I think it is a great reflection of who we are. I mean, it's all local. It's all regional for the most part, and it's a great time to celebrate.
Yeah, and I know we haven't mentioned what the fundraising goes to.
Sure.
And we can say, it goes to Arts United, and Arts United puts it back into the community. Mm-hmm. Whether the first mm-hmm. couple of years, the TASE funded new education grants for schools. And now that program is up and running, it's going to fund other community development projects, community art installations, or perhaps other grant funds that we can funnel that money right back in the community. So maybe the fundraiser is for Arts United, but in the end, it's for all of us.
Well, right. If it's what's good for Arts United is good for the Fortland. That's quite literally so, especially the arts. And speaking of, and if any of you folks out there thought that you saw Tenna and her mm-hmm. posse pushing wheelbarrows through town, yesterday afternoon, she was. And tell us why, Tenna.
Well, one of the things that's come up in this year's event that's kind of come as a side activity is the World on Wheels garden project. It's wheelbarrows, mm-hmm. and it's called WOW. But it's wheelbarrows that have been decorated by artists. There are 22 of them, I believe. And each one has a cultural liaison assigned to it. Each one represents a country. And the artist has painted it to represent the country based on the advice of the liaisons. There will be a gardener attached to each of these. And after they are on display at Taste of the Arts tomorrow as art, they will then go for planting. And for 2 weeks, they will be planted with plants from the region that are either native or represent the country, because we're learning a lot about native plants that aren't native anymore. And we use them so excessively that they become part of the landscape. So you'll see plants planted in these wheelbarrows placed around downtown as a public art project, starting with Be a Tourist on September 9th. And they'll be out at Parkview Field for then. And for the whole rest of September, you can go to Parkview Field during the day and see them for free on display. And an international blast at the end of September, our next last Saturday, they will then be auctioned. And that money will help immigrant and refugee programs and their fresh food initiative that helps them acclimate to our environment and learn how to grow here.
And again, another fantastic organization, the Catherine Casper Place, is mm-hmm. Is the key in all of this. And I have to say, I got to take a trip to Brazil, so to speak, because I was very honored to decorate the Brazil wheelbarrow. And what great fun it was. Susanna, my cultural liaison, was fantastic. Last evening's little sneak preview event was just fantastic. And thank you for getting everything moved over there, Tenna. Now, where will they be for the Taste of the Arts?
They will be lining the driveway of the Hour Center. You'll be walking between them as you walk to the acoustic stage back there. So there will also be live artistic demonstrations in that back area by the hour patio, where artists will be painting what they call plein air painting, mm-hmm. or other types of art will be demonstrated as artists do their work. So it's all going to be in that area together with the wheelbarrows. It's a very, very creative space.
A total taste of all art.
Yes.
Yeah. We haven't talked much about some of the details. The art marketplace is the biggest it's ever been this year. We have something like 33 artists represented, which is 50% more than last year. It's just
fantastic.
And next year we're going to jury that event. The Museum of Art is taking it under their wing, and they're really pushing it out. And we are going to turn that into a national show. So we're very excited to see the taste growing in this manner, and we're planning now for that to happen because it will take so much advance. So we haven't quite had this one, and we're already planning fifth year.
We're looking, too, at surveying people tomorrow, both as participating and at the festival, to decide whether we're at a point where we can talk about it as a two-day festival. You know, is it time to begin to expand this? We're already set up. Maybe run it on Sunday as well.
Right. And really, this would be a case of the more the merrier. And I'd like to remind folks that we are spending this Midday Matters very art-centrically. We are talking with Tenna Winker and Jim Sparrow all about the last Saturday events downtown this weekend, and including and showcasing tomorrow's Taste of the Arts. We've just got a couple minutes left. Is there anything you can say again, like, everything is free? This is so phenomenal, and Arts United is so great for hosting such an event. And anything else you'd like to tell listeners?
I can give you a couple more little tips about tomorrow. There is an evening Lotus Gallery art exhibit.
That's
and that
right.
will happen after the Taste. It starts at 6 p.m. So if you're interested in just going to a gallery, that would be one of the things to do. At the Taste Festival, I just had to mention that because I'd forgotten. At the Taste Festival, we have hands-on activities. So when you get there, go around Fryman Square and engage with those arts organizations. Mm-hmm. Find out what they do. If you're interested in their program, learn more, because we want those groups to set up and get more involvement, and that's part of the excitement of the day. They'll have hands-on activities for children, or instruments for even adults to pick up mm-hmm. and try to play, all different kinds of things. But there's ways to not only see the arts, but be a part of it. And that's part of tomorrow, too.
Take a taste. And Jim Sparrow, again, we can't thank you enough for joining us today, and also all that you do all year long through Arts United, and especially for this Taste of the Arts.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Julie and I are going to take a short, quick break, but we'll be back with more Friday Art-Centric Midday Matters here on WBOI. In the meantime, if you have a question about anything that's going on this weekend, give us a call, 260-452-1185. Or if you want to share an event that's going on, you can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm.
If you can't keep from eating that chocolate chip cookie, don't blame your willpower, blame your brain. On the next Fresh Air, neuroscientist David Eagleman explains how competing networks in the brain
are all battling it out to control your behavior. And it's exactly like a parliament.
His book Incognito is out in paperback. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Watch out for a pair of massive, tattoo-covered men who don't mind ramming their cars into yours.
You're looking at who you're going to go after next or see who's coming to get you. And it's fun.
It's Bumper Cars, and this popular duo has been behind the wheel every summer Friday night for 16 years.
For me, it's kind of like an adrenaline rush.
Brace yourself for the Bumper Car Psychos today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
In the 1960s, cornetist Don Cherry, who had come to fame as a member of Ornette Coleman's quartet, began to forge his own musical path, first as a sideman with musicians such as Sonny Rollins, and then as a leader. I'm David Brent Johnson, inviting you to tune in for Communion, Don Cherry in the 1960s, this week on Nightlights.
Fridays at 11 p.m. on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Unitarian Universalist Congregation, sponsoring the Art Venture Saugatuck Bus Trip, October 6th. Reservation deadline Sunday, September 2nd. Details at uufortwayne.org.
Welcome back to Friday Art-Centric Midday Matters here on WBOY. The time is 12:31. If you'd like to be a part of today's conversation, 260-452-1185 is the number to call. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Julia Meek, and we are going to be changing gears now.
Yes, yes, pleasantly, I must say,
pleasantly,
and seasonally, we might say, because this is actually pre-seasonally. This is a pre-seasonal dose of drama, drama, drama. We're going to look forward to now, and for that, who else could we have join us but First Press Theater's Tom Hoffichter. Hi, Tom.
Hello, good to be here.
We are looking at a brand new season of theatrical goodness ahead on the horizon, as well as so many things to talk about. So you're very, very, very wise to bring Renee Butler as your posse, and what's the dramaturgical buzz?
So a couple of the theaters are already in session, if you will. The Civic opened this summer with Dream Girls, and Arena had a Woody Allen piece open. We open 2 weeks from tonight with a wonderful play by Yasmina Reza called God of Carnage. And we'll be talking about that some. Renee and I will kind of interview each other because 2 weeks from, 2 weeks from tonight, I open God of Carnage on the stage as an actor. 2 weeks from tomorrow, Renee opens A Few Good Men, an Aaron Sorkin piece, as a director at the Civic Theater. Also in September, All for One debuts a play in Fort Wayne. It's called A Peculiar People. It's a really interesting play. All for One is a unique niche theater in Fort Wayne. They do things that are patently spiritual. They come from a Christian background. And this play sounds fascinating. It's about two prisoners in 85 AD who are kind of hanging out before they get fed to the lions. Mm-hmm. And sounds like a great play. And Eric Black, who plays George Bailey for me, and It's a Wonderful Life a few years ago is in it, so he'll be terrific. And that opens towards the end of September. So those are the three September offerings from Fort Wayne Theater.
We're very happy to actually be able to jump back into never having quite left the drama, but it gets slow in the summertime, and then to know that everything is coming back in full force in September. Also, I will remind our listeners that we have posted this the information about the two plays that we're going to be talking about just now on our Facebook page, and so folks can go to Midday Matters on Facebook and learn more about all of this. And right now, I am so intrigued to hear about both God of Carnage and A Few Good Men, different from each other and each interesting. And Renee Butler, it's so good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
And tell us about your busy life.
Well, I'm a teacher. I teach at Canterbury School, and occasionally I get the opportunity to direct out in the community, and it is always a pleasure to be working with a different age group. I like the opportunity that I get to work with adults and children, and I'd be hard-pressed if I had to choose between the two of them.
It's terrific, too. Renee and I have a long past. I won't put the number on it.
Good, thank
but,
you.
But we first met back in 19-whatever, and I was playing Lenny in Mice and Men, and she was playing Curly's wife. So we've known each other for quite a while.
Oh, and what a wonderful theatrical introduction to each other. And
right, he kills me.
And I picked you up off the ground and
you
broke
did.
Your neck.
But you did.
It was great, because I've been back for about 17 years, and it was one of the wonderful things is coming back to this community of people, one of which is Renee, who we so love dearly, my wife and I, who are in God of Carnage. We have two husband and wife teams who are playing the husband and wife in the show. And they both have children, and the children get in an altercation, and it's the parents getting together and trying to work it out. It's been around for about 7 years now. It played on Broadway with James Gandolfini and Jeff Daniels. But it's a terrific little show. It's funny, but it's also dark and warning. It is R-rated.
Well, and the thing I noticed about this, you know, once you know the setup, of course, and I've got children, and you know, one of my kids bit someone at daycare once, so I kind of know the territory, but it goes south pretty quickly, Tom.
The play?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
they can't keep the pretense up for very long, can they?
Yeah, and I mean, you find out into the play that both of them have, well, the couple that I'm a part of, basically it's their home, and the wife has laid down some pretty strict rules for me. This is how we're going to behave. And I do my best for about 5-6 pages.
Yep. is this based on real life behavior, Tom, or is this?
No, actually one of the really ironic things about it is myself and Nancy Carthall, my wife, and Jay Duffer, who's the chair of Huntington University Theater Department, and his wife, Melissa, who just choreographed Dream Girls and is a theater professional. Actually, Actors Equity, the professional actors union, have lent us Jay and Melissa to do this production. But none of us have children. Uh-huh. David Shuler, who's directing it, he and his wife don't have children. So we were talking about this amongst some friends of mine who came in from out of town, and all of us childless people were these experts on how about dealing with your children, and the people with children were just kind of nodding their heads going, yeah, that's kind of the way it is.
Well, you know, if you've got dogs, and I know you do, it's sort of the same thing. It's like, don't criticize my dog for running across your yard. You didn't have a fence. Mm-hmm. You can understand it. But I have a question for you, Tom. When I read this, I didn't know which couple you were doing, and I'm curious to find out why you chose that couple.
I'm not exactly sure. It just kind of was a foregone conclusion. I mean, when Nancy and I read it, we both kind of assumed we'd play that. Actually, my first exposure to it was Nancy's sister, who lives in Louisville, saw it at Actors Theater, sent a picture of the Broadway thing and circled James Gandolfini and wrote my name, and circled Marcia Gay Harden and wrote Nancy's name, which is what we ended up playing. And also when we brought David Shuler in, and David is another theater professional. He teaches theater at University of Wisconsin-Platteville. He runs a professional summer theater musical a summer musical theater up in Platteville. But anyway, it was always just kind of assumed. I mean, my character's kind of a big oafish guy. And it goes back to Renee knows this because she's known me for 30 years. My joke has always been, I either play big dumb guys or big mean guys. And every once in a while I get to stretch and I get to play a big dumb mean guy. But actually, now that I'm older and my hair is gray, I can play fathers, and you know, the world has opened up. But being a large man, it's always kind of made sense that I played the Neanderthal.
Okay. Well, so that's interesting. Now, I have a question, and this sort of takes us back a season to Virginia Woolf, where you played a married couple, but you did not play with your real-life wife that mm-hmm. time. Can you tell me a little bit about the differences of that?
Boy, Virginia Woolf's a lot longer. It's like a 3-hour script. Yeah, so when I got this, I was like, oh, it's only an 80-minute play, yay. I'm not the one that talks all the time, because Virginia Woolf, I just talked and talked and talked and talked. But working with Kate Black, was playing Martha, was just a dream. She's a terrific actress as well. And I love working with Nancy. And one of the things Nancy and I met in the theater, our relationship was, actually I directed her and she was an actor.
It's Tartuffe. I was in that.
Yep, and you were in that. So Renee's been there for all the formative moments of my life.
But we're still not saying how long that would be, even though I had a slipper.
No,
there.
Yeah.
And I would like to remind our listeners that this is Midday Matters, certainly Friday Art-centric edition, and we love to have a whole taste of drama, drama, drama in this second segment, and we certainly love having Tom Hoffrichter here with us, and today the lovely Renee Butler, so it makes it doubly sweet. If anybody has a question, you could call in
at 260-452-1185, or you could always post it on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm. And we actually have to take a short break, but we're going to be back with more Friday Art-Centric Midday Matters here on WBOI.
Are you working for the weekend? Plug into the Friday Vibe. I'm Bill Forsyth, playing jazz of all types from all eras, plus blues, a little pop, folk, and rock to roll you into the weekend. The Friday Vibe, 7 to 11 on your home for jazz in Northeast Indiana, WBOI.
Good afternoon. I'm Sean Beter with WBOI News. Authorities say a drug ring two Indiana inmates allegedly ran behind bars using contraband cell phones shows the risks posed by the widespread problem of the phones being smuggled into the nation's prisons. Prison cell phones are so common that one of the nation's most notorious inmates, Charles Manson, has been caught at least twice with cell phones in the California prison where he's serving a life sentence. Texas State Senator Joan Huffman says about 2,000 cell phones are seized annually from Texas prisons. She says some inmates use cell phones to circumvent prison monitored landlines so they can orchestrate criminal activity or threaten victims and witnesses. A federal indictment unsealed Wednesday alleges two Indiana prison inmates used smuggled cell phones to run a drug ring involving 38 other people. Democratic gubernatorial candidate John Gregg on Thursday unveiled an 8-point plan aimed at increasing the state's total exports by 50% in 5 years. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith has the story.
Gregg applauded the work of Governor Daniels in expanding Indiana's global presence and says as governor, his policies would further that work. Those include coordinating statewide export strategies, developing tax incentives for Hoosier businesses that export at least 75% of their products, and creating an export innovation fund that would provide money to trade associations and private businesses.
Coming up with a strategy that promotes and identifies Hoosier products, Hoosier as a brand internationally. And let me tell you, if you can brand a mustache in a political campaign, we can brand Hoosier products around the world.
Gregg says he also wants to build a Midwest trade alliance in which neighboring states coordinate trade missions and efforts. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
And Governor Mitch Daniels is supporting a trails program included in the federal transportation bill Congress approved this summer. The federal program has helped Indiana construct 100 miles of trails as the state presses toward a goal of having a trail within 7.5 miles of every Hoosier. Daniels said Thursday that the continued federal aid will help the state hit that target. Indiana has collected $14 million in federal funds from the program since 1994. Now back to Midday Matters Art-Centric with your hosts Sarah D'Elia and Julia Meek.
Welcome back to Friday Art-Centric Midday Matters here on WBOI. The time is 12:44. And if you'd like to be part of the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 260-452-1185 is the number to call. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm.
And we're very happy to have Tom Hoffrichter, as we do every, almost in this case, last Friday, talking drama. And we're even happy. I started to say more happy, but I don't want to hurt your feelings, Tom.
That's okay.
But we are.
She's here less often. I'm more happy, too.
We're delighted to have Renee Butler here as well.
Okay, Tom, I have another question. First of all, did they just make this into a movie?
Yeah, called Carnage, which it kind of, it was there and gone. It was Jodie Foster. I can't remember who else was in it. I know some people who saw it, and they said, It was okay. It was a good movie, but for some reason it just never caught fire. And I mean, it didn't do a lot of business, and I think it played at the Cinema Center for like a weekend or something like that, if I remember right.
This play was so fun. You just devour it. Mm-hmm. When I devoured it when I read it. Can you tell the people listening, God of Carnage, why?
Well, I think ultimately what the play's trying to talk about is, I compare it, there's a wonderful Stephen Sondheim musical called Into the Woods, where through the whole musical, people keep singing, no matter what we say, children won't listen. And then at the end, the lyric is changed to, no matter what you say, children won't listen, children will watch and learn. And it's this idea that we come together to try to settle the differences between our two children who have committed violence on one another. I'm sorry, I thought I turned that off. Committed violence on one another. And basically what we do is we commit violence on one another too, on each other, on our spouses, on the other couple. And there's a big speech about the fact that our society worships the God of Carnage. That almost everybody works and tries to get what they want out of life, regardless of what anybody else wants. And that this worship and wanting what you want and willing to do absolutely anything for it is kind of what we worship in modern day society.
Well, you just mentioned, and it's one of the things I really appreciated about the script. Of course, again, there's another tie-in. We worked on one of this playwright's plays together years ago. Mm-hmm. She wrote Art, and we worked on that together. At any rate, one of the things I really liked about this play was that was the shifting alliances.
Right. And we were actually talking about that last night with the director and Nancy and I. Because Art in some ways is funnier, but the stakes aren't as high. You have three guys and they fight over the fact that one of them has bought an all-white painting. And the question is, what is art? And should one of your friends be allowed to do something that you think is really, really stupid, which is pay $25,000 for an all-white painting? And that the friendship and the kind of manipulation and domination of one another is kind of similar. And it's told in kind of a black comedy style. And you laugh, and at the end you find out that you have to give up things for friendship. The difference in this play, though, is I think the stakes are higher, because those three guys who are arguing about art, it affects them. But here we have two children, and in our case, my fictional character's case, we also have a daughter who I've done something pretty horrible to her.
And
that
the
comes
hamster.
Up. Yeah, the hamster,
and
that's
the hamster.
What I'm talking about. He's not crazy about the hamster and so disposes of it, but the actions don't just deal with one another, but they have consequences to these young people, and we are teaching them how to behave, and we are teaching them, I think the playwright would argue, to worship of God of Carnage. This play is rated R, which means there's some language and there's some rough stuff that goes on in it. And we at First Pres, people are always, ooh, you do that in a church? We believe that you can't really look at humanity if you don't really look at them. And people, unfortunately, behave like this. I mean, I think if we were all honest, I would say I behave like this. Mm-hmm. I can be cruel and horrible to people because I want something and because I get angry when I don't get it. I try not to be that way, but I think we all do that. So anyway, at First Pres, we try to pick stuff that somehow can hopefully make people see their lives more clearly. So anyway, with that, let's switch over and let's talk about the show that you've been directing and you've been living with for, I guess, several months now. Let's start with cast. You have a terrific cast.
I have a terrific cast. I am so excited. Auditions for this were very unusual. Oftentimes when you go to auditions, you see faces that you're very familiar with. There are three people in this play who have never done a play before. Well, maybe, you know, maybe since second grade or something. And I had several others at auditions who have never done a play before. And I just admire people who have reached adulthood who are willing to say, you know what, I'm going to try something new. Mm-hmm. So I was really excited to be able to use them. And I guarantee you will not be able to tell who the beginners are. And, well, Tom, you know this. Sometimes the less experience a person has, the more honest and open mm-hmm. they can be because they haven't really developed a bunch of bad habits.
And in some ways, if you're a teacher like you are, it becomes easier to teach somebody that's a blank slate than has kind of some bad stuff scribbled all over the chalkboard,
exactly.
But there's two instances in that, because you have David Sorg, Dr. David Sorg, who's one of my dear friends, and about mm-hmm. 10 years ago, and yeah, that's right,
he's been on our Health 360 show, here. Yeah. Actually.
He's an endocrinologist, but about 10 years ago, he saw an audition for It's a Wonderful Life at our theater, and he hadn't done theater since college, I believe, and came an audition, and he's been a nut about it ever since, and he just gets better and better. And do you remember little Bobby Allersmeyer when we did Tartuffe? He was in that production of Tartuffe. He was the guy that came on at the end and had the speech about the king.
No way.
Yeah. It was one of the first things Bob did, and Bob has turned into a very accomplished actor.
He is a very fine actor.
And this is Midday Matters Friday Art Centric. We are talking with Renee Butler and Tom Hoffichter, and you're hearing wonderful drama, Insider Scoop. The play that they're discussing now is Renee's Charge, and it is A Few Good Men. And so, yeah, tell us some more.
Well,
tell us a little bit about, because I think everybody probably they immediately think of the movie. And, you know, everybody was joking, who's playing Tom Cruise? I mean, technically, you're not playing Tom Cruise. And who's playing Jack Nicholson? But tell us about your Tom Cruise and your Jack Nicholson. And tell us how the play is different from the movie.
Well, you know, whenever you're doing a play that's been a very famous movie, this was a famous movie with breakout performances by Tom Cruise and Demi Moore, it's always difficult because you don't want to just recreate. I don't want to just recreate the movie. There, I don't find any interest in that. This will not look at all like the movie. It is a very theatrical theater production. The set by Robert Sjoquist is very unrealistic. Clearly, once you sit down, you know you're not going to see the movie. The blocking is very theatrical. You're not going to see the movie. One thing I do when you're dealing with a situation like this is tell the actors as soon as possible, please do not watch the movie. Mm-hmm. Please don't try to recreate Tom Cruise or Jack Nicholson. This is our own piece of art, and we need to approach this honestly and from a fresh perspective. Mm-hmm. So we've fought against that a little bit, but you know, we've got people, you know, Bob Aldersmeyer really is just a consummate professional.
Mm-hmm. And he just finished Farnsworth, which was by the same playwright. He won an Anthony for it, and he's done some wonderful things out at IPFW and at our space. He's really turned into a fine young actor.
He really has, and I think that his presence really raises the bar. Mm-hmm. You know, he comes in at the first rehearsal practically off book, which was a bit of a trick for this one because the scripts that the first script that I had that I was working on for several months did not turn out to be the script that we had, because this script has gone through three adaptations.
I hate when that
happens.
I know.
So you open up, you know, you're going to look at this scene. It's like, what happened to that scene? Well, that's not what they say.
And how that happens, I mean, somebody out there might go, how can that happen? What probably happened is Renee got a published version that was from early, and then the playwright did some rewrites and republished it. And actually, we were talking about Virginia Woolf last night again, and Virginia Woolf has a lot of profanity because Albee rewrote it in 90 after writing it in 1962. And when I put it on the season, I didn't put a warning because there's language in it label. And then all of a sudden, we were at the first read, and I was like, holy shlamoli, where'd those words come from?
Yes. You know?
Actually, I said something else. But
exactly. There you go, editing again.
Exactly, same thing. Well, what he, of course, this was on Broadway, and then I think there was another revival, and then the movie, and there are lots of changes. This script is closer to the movie than that that original script.
And did you hear him interviewed on NPR where he wrote the core of this? He was working as a bartender in a Broadway theater, and while everybody else went in and saw the show, he was taking cocktail napkins, and he wrote the whole play that way, and he would take it home and type it up at night. But,
right. So.
So Sorkin has become amazing. Tell us a little bit about if you'd had a connection with Sorkin's plays before, because in some ways Aaron Sorkin, the play you're opening, and Yasmina Reza are two of the kind of young hotshots of playwriting in the world right now.
Well, when you were talking about yours, I thought about that too. And I think the thing that is so appealing about Sorkin and also your playwright is their ability to create sparkling dialogue that is compelling and makes the audience really sit up and listen and get involved. Mm-hmm. They're able to do that with dialogue in a way that I think a lot of writers just aren't.
Yeah, and it's fun to say their words. I mean, Sorkin's words, you listen to them, and it's prose, but it sounds like music. It's almost like it's a poetry slam you're at when you're listening to those old episodes of The West Wing. And I've only seen one episode of his new show on HBO. I can't even think of the title of it now.
Newsroom?
The Newsroom. But that one, too, every once in a while, a character goes off on a word jaunt, and it's like, wow, that looked like that was fun to say.
I know. Well, it is. Yeah. And sort of like Shakespeare, you know, you say something and then you think, you feel afterwards, mm-hmm. Wow, that felt really good.
Because yeah. we as actors love to say the words. I mean, the words are so exciting. Well, you're basically opening 2 weeks from tomorrow. We open 2 weeks from tonight. This play just keeps getting produced over and over and over again. Why is it timeless?
Well, it's timeless because it deals with the issue of defending people. You know, how do we defend people in our lives personally? Like, you know, Bob's role, how am I going to defend these people? And how does our military defend us? And what are we willing to put up with in the defense of our nation?
Yeah.
And those are really, really big issues that continue to confront us.
Mm-hmm. And I think it also, for me, it also works because it does, it addresses us as a country in terms of how do we use our military.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, I think, one of the reasons we keep going back to it is that the story of Bob Olermeyer's character, Caffey. It's a coming of age.
Absolutely.
I mean, this young man has so many gifts intellectually, and he's just kind of wasting them until he finds something that sparks his passion. And for me, one of the things I love about theater is oftentimes I see kids who are kind of stumbling through life, and they do a play, and all of a sudden they're passionate about learning or... learning especially, because almost everything I know, it's because I've done a play about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You have to go out and find out the information.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. It is Caffey's journey. And is he going to stand up? Is he going to man up and defend these people to the best of his ability?
Mm-hmm. And so, but since you're not doing the movie, we're not going to hear. You can't handle the truth.
No,
huh?
No, you are. You are.
You hear the line,
but
probably not in
the
Nicholson.
No, it is not going to be in Nicholson's voice. We've got our own spectacular actor. His name is Ken Lowe, and
oh, he's terrific.
Oh, he's just awesome. Yes, and he is really doing a good job of making that his own.
And so we would like to make this whole afternoon our own and learn lots more, but the show is nearly over. So just to recap, I know that we are looking forward to, in a couple of weeks, the opening of God of Carnage.
And that runs September 6th through the 22nd.
And we can look forward to A Few Good Men.
And that runs, Renee, is it?
September 8th through 16th.
That's right, because you're on the first two weekends, and then we've got one additional weekend.
Right.
And then on our third weekend, All for One has a terrific production, A Peculiar People.
Thanks very much to all of our listeners today. And Julia and I will see you same place, same time next week on Friday. But we do want to remind everyone that this episode of Midday Matters will be podcasted by the end of the day, as are all of our Midday Matters episodes. And you can always watch us tomorrow at 4 p.m. on cable channel 57 or Fios 27. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1. We're streaming online at NIPR.FM. This is WBOI Fort Wayne. And a special reminder that Julia and I will have our own Meet the Music dessert stage tomorrow from 6 to 10 p.m. That's a Meet the Music stage. It's going to be on the corner of Barry and Bar. That's behind the First Source Bank. And you can come again. That's from 6 to 10 p.m. There's Sunny Taylor, Augustus Berry, and Chad Elvington, The Distraction. Attractions, the Elkie Summers, Left Lane Cruisers. We hope we see you there. Thanks very much for listening. We're coming up on 1 o'clock. Fresh Air is next.